This is from We Shadows by Tom Quackenbush. Narrated by Tom Quackenbush. Chapter 8, After the Fall. Shane transitioned from sleep to waking as fast as a cat, her eyes cracking open to let in the least amount of light. The ceiling above her bed was the wrong hue of white, far too large and smooth. Fractured memories of the night before poured back into her head, strained through her mental colander, enough to know that she should be experiencing the skewers of a hangover poking her in the back of the skull. She bit her lip and braced for the inevitable. Nothing. She waited a moment more, shaking her head as though it might shatter. Still nothing, aside from lightheadedness. She worked her tongue around in her mouth, not displeased but confused to be rewarded with nothing more offensive than morning breath. There was something about that drink that her brain urged her to remember. Now, she remembered the drink and falling down, though her stomach sunk in embarrassment. She was supposed to remember something after that. A memory floated to the surface of her mind, as though it were part of a movie she saw while falling asleep. She remembered three figures around her, pushing her. One of them said something harsh. It made the hairs on the back of her neck stand on edge. But the person sounded so calm. Then she remembered the knife in her chest, and that she fell down a great deal harder. Reflexively, she touched the place above her bra, where the dream knife entered, and two shocks followed in quick succession. First, she now had a scar there. Second, she wasn't wearing a shirt, which had been her habit since the first time she awoke in her dorm room to Dryden standing there asking if she wanted breakfast. Shane had thought it an annoying irony that a supposed vampire would be a morning person. Her eyes widened at the ramifications, though the sundry parts of her mind would not work in concert to process what this could mean. A third and more disarming shock went through her when her eyes were fully opened. Her ceiling looked strange because it was not her ceiling, which in turn was not attached to her walls or her floor, on which should not rest a king-sized bed on which she lay. The white walls were covered with gold and silver intersecting symbols, only some of which made sense to her. None of this was familiar, made all the more distressing and dreadful by her half-nakedness. A gasp climbed the ladder of her throat, but the survival function of her brain, dormant through disuse, kicked in to stop her. Screaming, it informed her, would be a bad idea, and would attract unwanted and unneeded attention. This function commandeered the rest of her brain, grateful to be of use. It sent a message to calm down her heart and slow her breathing, which had grown rapid and shallow. Her brain assured her that there would be ample time to panic later. Now was not the time for extraneous movement or sound. First things first, ordered her brain, find your shirt. Once you have your shirt, you can find an exit. And this was not the most logical sequence of events. An exit could be made without a shirt. It would be embarrassing, however, and the vestiges of her Mayflower ancestors were imprinted upon her brain at the deepest levels. She splayed her limbs out and slid them, feeling for any known texture. Were anyone to be watching Shane, and she hoped this wasn't the case, they would think she were making a slow-motion snow angel on the bed. Then again, if she thought anyone were watching, she would attack blindly and run without direction, both of which lacked the poetry of her horizontal ballet and were unlikely to result in continued safety. Her shirt was cotton, so it would contrast with the near-frictionless sheets. At the apex of her angelic motion of her arms, her pinky snagged a sleeve and pulled it to her. Three large gashes cut through the shirt's front and back, each stiff and dark with blood. She shuddered, and her brain ordered her not to think of vomiting. She sat up and examined her body in more detail, the razor edge of panic. She bore triangular scars where the map of her shirt told her she would, one over her heart, one on her back above her right lung, and one above her belly button. While the shirt showed a matching exit tear for each cut, a macabre suggestion that she was thrice skewered, no scars denoted exit wounds. Her brain battled with memorized science, insisting that she couldn't have healed from this injury. Nor, it added with a note of pessimism, should she be able to sit up, breathe, or be quite so reasonable ever again. She sensed the beginnings of a sob and steadied herself. The mission had changed. See that closet next to the bed? Open it, but slowly. Shirts. Take one. Anyone. Shane slid a dull white silk man shirt off the velvet hanger. It was too large for her, falling to the middle of her thigh. But she was not dressing for fashion. She slid on her shoes, both placed at the foot of the bed in a concerted attempt at tidiness by whoever put her there, and buttoned enough of the shirt for it to remain on without shocking her Puritan forebearers. She considered her bloodied shirt on the ground, but felt revulsion. Almost without a word, her left hand grabbed the sleeve of it, like a child grasping a worn-out doll. She spotted a door 15 feet from the bed, and knew that this had to be the exit. The only obstacle between her and potential safety was a hallway. She could see that a light was on, in addition to the sunlight streaming in through unseen windows. She tiptoed toward the door. When she reached the corner of the adjoining corridor, she looked to the end of it, despite her brain warning her. All she could see was the dark red hair of a man she suspected put her in the bed. She did not think he heard as she shut the door behind her. The noon sun presided over the world, banishing Shane's shadow to the bottom of her shoes. Shane checked her watch, not wanting to believe this. Though she had anticipated a hangover, she had also intended on attending her morning classes. The hand of her watch was unmoving, having stopped the night before. She shook it, not believing this would yield positive results, and thus not being disappointed. Accepting the sun's edict, Shane cut her losses and opted to seek out solace. She needed to clear her head and try to piece together the night before, both of which could best be accomplished over lunch. She was disoriented as she walked, and, though the emotion made no sense, felt too guilty to look at anyone passing. She couldn't place the origin of the emotion, getting stupidly drunk or waking up in a stranger's bed. She was almost positive the latter was in no way her fault. Rosalind was as good as her schedule, already seated at a table when Shane arrived. Shane got a sandwich from the counter and sat down. The clerk had not asked for money or acknowledged that Shane was pilfering food, but she would pay when she left. Approaching the table, Shane exclaimed, "Rosalind, you have no idea how good it is to see you." Shane slid into the seat, feeling normality click. Rosalind blinked at Shane a few moments, as though uncertain why Shane blocked her view. "I'm sorry I didn't go back to the dorm last night, and I'm sorry I ran off yesterday. That's what I wanted to talk to you about," Shane began. This was harder to say than she had imagined, though she had not endeavored to imagine the conversation beyond these sentences. Rosalind's face softened, and a familiar crooked smile worked its way onto her cheeks. "Hi," she greeted as though she'd just spotted Shane in front of her. This, Shane took it, was Rosalind's way of accepting her apologies. Shane had hoped retelling the events of the night prior would clear things up, but the memories came slower now and events grew faint. Everything between entering the garden and waking up felt like it happened years ago to someone with less common sense. "What did the guy look like?" Rosalind asked when the story ended in silence, her voice a little too excited. "I don't know. I just saw him from the back. He had dark red hair, like he dyed it with maraschino coal." Shane had tried to spare the details, but Rosalind insisted she was a sensualist, and always pushed Shane to describe events and people in detail, particularly people to whom she might be attracted. "Sounds like my type," Rosalind purred into her diet soda. Her type constituted those males that would look best wearing vinyl. "That's not the point," she explained as though frustrated with a disagreeable child who was busily trying to discover the world through her mouth and comparable orifices. Shane was distressed by this casualness, though exposure to Rosalind would ordinarily have inured her. "I think I was drugged, and I think he took advantage of me." This, Shane believed, at the risk of shattering her worldview, was no one's type. "Do you feel taken advantage of?" Rosalind replied. There was the beginning of concern in her tone. Shane thought about this, and, despite her practical innocence on these matters, realized she hadn't been. The pit of her stomach reminded her that she was still not above vomiting. She thanked it by not biting into her sandwich. Off Shane's look of nausea, Rosalind continued, "It just seems like no harm, no foul. Maybe this guy took you home to sleep it off. He could be a gentleman. Stranger things have happened." This version of events projected itself into her mind. It seized her previously terrified thoughts and melted them, superimposing where it could. She almost converted to feeling grateful when she remembered dreaming of being stabbed and finding her bloody shirt and the scars. She reached under the white shirt and traced a scar on her stomach, dull and prominent. Even as she clung to these horrors, she wanted to give in to the idea of a helpful stranger who let her sleep off a hangover. It was a better world where people did this, but not this world. Shane tried to remember what had happened to her shirt, her piece of irrefutable evidence. She remembered clinging to it as she left the apartment, and then nothing. It was important that she bring it with her because... Why was she thinking about her shirt? She was wearing a silk one. It was a bit big for her, but... Shane? What? Sorry, I got distracted. What were we talking about? Some girls just couldn't handle hookups with style, Rosalind reasoned. That guy last night, she reminded Shane. Right, the boy in the garden. The weird part was, he looked a lot like Elliot, but ugly, like he was trying like Elliot almost. Since Elliot loved the garden so much and I was there because of him, I... Rosalind interrupted. What are you talking about? You met him in a garden? His name's Elliot? Shane glared ice picks at Rosalind, who looked guileless. She may be thoughtless, but she wouldn't pretend she'd forgotten about Elliot. And Shane had never in her life owned a silk shirt. She was not now, nor did she ever intend to be, the sort of woman who cottoned to silk. Her shirt was purple and was covered in blood. Rosalind, something is wrong. I've got to go. Go where? Shane had little idea. I'm sorry. There's just some stuff I need to figure out. I promise I will tell you everything when I get back to the dorm. Shane stood and ran out of the cafe. No one watched her leave. What was that girl on about? Wondered Rosalind a moment before she noticed the uneaten sandwich that had appeared at the table across from her. Shane needed a quiet place to think out the last 24 hours. Intro to philosophy, her next class, fit the bill. She entered a few minutes after class began. The professor took no notice of her tardiness. Shane started toward her usual seat in the third row of the cavernous hall and felt annoyed to see that the boy from the garden last night sat there and stared at her. Was he even in this class? Shane wondered. She looked around for a seat, but when she turned back to her seat to glare at him, found it empty. She borrowed a pen and a sheet of paper from the boy to her left, who rarely paid attention to her and did not change this now until she jabbed him with her finger. He gave her the required items without a word and with the barest minimum of looking at her. Though she knew he was only taking this class because he could get a C without any work, he was fixated on the teacher's projected diagram of a chained man looking at shadow puppets of trees. Shane wrote what little she knew. It felt good to have this on paper. Seeing the words made them something beyond her, something she could externalize, something that didn't happen to her, but to a heroine with her name who had the power and wherewithal to deal with them. After Elliot's suicide, Shane had begun to keep her diary again, having neglected it for years in favor of stories and poems. She would never go back to revise the entries about Elliot. It was still too close. She just needed the words on paper that she could hide. She couldn't be herself with the thoughts inside her, festering. She wasn't the hero of her story. She was just a miserable girl who wasn't good enough to keep her boyfriend alive. Shane brought herself back to the far more pressing and less self-pitying task at hand. She tried to think of the facts and details she was missing, anything useful. Though she could not help but hear the teacher prattling on about how people cannot perceive the truth without an enlightened firebearer coming to explain it to them. She read enough that she was confident the professor was trying to get them to talk about Plato. She was, however, surprised to see that her hand was raised in answer to one of his rhetorical questions. The teacher looked at her, but continued to mutter that no one had done the reading, and that he blamed himself for expecting that they would want to be better people. Shane raised her hand higher and even began to wave it. Still nothing. He might be a prig, but he wasn't blind. Shane stood. Still, he seemed not to see her. Finally, she just exclaimed the answer. The teacher stared at her. She looked at her classmates, all of whom were looking either at the professor or ignoring her. None took any notice of Shane's outburst.
No one knows? Plato, this is all about Plato. You're going to be shackled to the allegorical cave unless you take it upon yourselves to take in what I'm telling you. I suggest you all reread the chapter before the test Friday because...
This was far too much like a nightmare, save that she was dressed and there were no clowns. Shane bolted out of the room, 35 sets of eyes fixed anywhere but on her. Shane ran back to her room, only stopping for the guy Joe, with whom Rosalind had tried to fix her up. When she touched him, he smiled, but his eyes betrayed only that he found her attractive and curious. When she left him, so too did any recollection that she'd interrupted his walk to the campus drug dealer. She slid in through an open lobby door and headed to her room to recuperate and await Rosalind. She would find some way to help. Shane's key would not fit in the lock to her room, no matter how much she tried to convince it that it should. None of her keys fit. She beat her fist against the door to no effect. A girl passing in the hall did not react to the sound. Shane slumped against the door, her head making one final thud. Reaching into her pocket, she produced enough money to get chocolate from the vending machine down the hall. It was half melted, but distracting. Chocolate was dependable, but she couldn't bring herself to do any more than stare at her. She decided to give her dorm room one last chance. She reached into her pocket for her keys and came up empty. She tried again, rummaging through the pockets. Nothing. She frowned at the locked door as though it were solid metal and gave up. Shane left the building, trying to ignore the people around her as much as they were ignoring her. Even when she would walk up to them, they would veer from her path without showing that they saw her. She could push them and they stumbled and walked on. Even when she spoke to them, they ignored her screaming until she touched them. She felt on the edge of panic, but the logical part of her brain noted the rules of this game. She walked until she reached Blythewood Garden, as though her body pulled her there without her mind's input. She went to the fountain, pleased to see that the water reflected her face. Out of habit, she picked a green plant with barely present pink buds, an act forbidden by campus security. Shane walked up to the statue, as though approaching for communion. The stone girl's smile seemed sympathetic to Shane's plight. She placed the stalk on the stone girl's lap. "What in the name of God is going on?" she asked the statue. "Good question," said a voice behind her. She yelped at the sound and was about to embrace its owner when she saw his red hair. He smiled with amusement and a little cruelty, as though moments away from watching an infant trip over a neglected toy. If she did not already wish to do him harm, that smile would have earned her contempt. He dressed in a style that would have been nondescript were it not the color produced by a spotlight on snow. In his hand, he held Shane's purple shirt, removing what little doubt Shane fostered. "And good questions deserve good answers, don't they, Pat?"